everyone, and welcome back to Mallory's Weird World Adventures, the podcast. In kind of typical fashion here, I'm going to switch back for this episode to talk a bit about travel and adventure to one of the most incredible places in the world. In fact, it is one of the seven wonders of the world, so that checks out here. I'm talking about Cambodia and the temples of Angkor. For those who don't know, I decided to volunteer during the summer of 2019 at an archaeological dig in Cambodia. Petit Cambodia Project Excavating Ancient Households was an excavation led by doctors Miriam Stark and Allison Carter. The goal of the dig was to discover how people lived back during the pre-Angkorian, Angkorian, and post-Angkorian periods. While scientists are still regularly studying the Angkorian temples, much more is known about them, while there is very little and much more to discover regarding how people lived and what their homes were like in the surrounding areas. You see, the temple research focuses on the elite, and the farther away you get from these large temples, the more you can see how regular people of the society used to live. The site of excavation was just behind Prasat Basait, a small sandstone temple just northeast of Battambang. I knew little about archaeology going into it, but I have always been interested in it, and I thought this would be a great opportunity to volunteer, learn, and gain a truly unique experience and some cool skill sets, too. My journey began as I flew 14 hours from Los Angeles to Shanghai. After a 14-hour layover and a really fun day at Shanghai Disneyland, I flew the last 4 hours from Shanghai, China, to Siem Reap, Cambodia. By the way, it turns out you can get a 24-hour visa pass at the airport if you'd like to go into Shanghai for the day. You just need to have enough time that they see fit to get in and get back. So with my 16-hour layover, I was able to get a free pass, my 24-hour visa, to go to Disneyland Shanghai, which was an awesome experience in itself. If you are lucky enough to get to go to Shanghai and visit Disneyland, I cannot recommend enough checking out the Pirates of the Caribbean ride there, because it is the absolute coolest ride I've ever ridden in my life, and I am saying that now, and I seriously feel that way. You go backwards, you go forwards, there's a whole section where you're underground, and they use these animatronics, and the environment, and the scenery to really make you feel like you're under the water, and I was very impressed, I will just say. Anyway, already off topic, Disney tends to do that to me. My first day in Cambodia was spent exploring the temples of Angkor. After a full day of exploration and some nice relaxation and food at the Park Hyatt, which I can comfortably say is probably the nicest hotel in all of Siem Reap, I went to sleep ready to meet up with my team the following morning. After a hearty breakfast that morning, I took a tuk-tuk, which is basically a carriage pulled by a motorbike, and a very much cheaper way to get around in Cambodia, to our meeting spot. After meeting my driver and three other volunteers, we began our journey southwest to Battambang. 3.5 hours later, after leaving an extremely bumpy car ride due to construction, we arrived at the Coconut House, our home for the next bit of time. Something different that I noted about the driving in Cambodia is that most roads are one lane, so people would constantly pass each other. While passing, a driver would honk at the car, tuk-tuk, or bike they were passing to ensure they knew they were beside them. They were very vocal drivers with their horns in that way, but it was all for safety, so it was honestly fine. There are also a lot of cows and oxen all around you as you drive through the countryside, which is nice. Now, I had never been to Asia before, let alone Southeast Asia or Cambodia. I didn't know what to expect, but Cambodia is one of the top poorest countries in the world, with an average household income of roughly $1,300 per year. That being said, things are obviously very different there than they are in the United States. But I just love the new experience either way. I find it thrilling to experience new cultures and new ways of life. While our living situation while we were there was nice, most families live without these luxuries. Somehow, I was prepared for the bathroom situation, which I have to say is a feat in itself. I thought ahead to carry my own toilet paper in my bag, my field bag with me at all times, which is something I usually tend to do just in case. And in this case, it was wise, as there is not toilet paper in the vast majority of Cambodian restrooms. The toilets there in Battambang can't really flush toilet paper, so some provided waste baskets for it. Others did not. For those, one must carry a plastic bag to put their toilet paper in until finding a waste basket to throw it away in. Some toilets flushed, some did. Others had basins of water next to them for you to scoop the water out and dump it into the toilet to manually flush it. It was the first time I've ever manually flushed a toilet. I was pretty proud of myself there. Aside from that, people were charming and the markets were very lively, and it was a fun place to explore. On the day of my arrival into Battambang, I met with Miriam Stark, who took myself and another volunteer out with her family to see one of the temples in the area. This was a very large flight of stairs built into a hill. It was a steep climb, but the view was breathtaking. And Miriam told us the history of Battambang and about the classic homes compared to the new homes. As we drove to the monument, people were casually cooking on the side of the road where a lot of people could come cheaply stop to sit and eat. Her family was very kind, and Miriam herself was genuinely ready to share her knowledge and to learn more about me and the other volunteers as well, which I really appreciated. She also told us about the spirit houses. The Khmer people believe that each building has its spirits, so to keep the spirits from haunting their home, they have a spirit house, which honestly looks like a fancy, fancy little temple-decorated mailbox in front of their home for the spirits to live in. I didn't see a single home without a spirit box. I mean, that was truly fascinating to me. And a lot of times they would leave offerings or incense or objects they found in these spirit houses to appease the spirits. As for the work, during our weekdays, I learned so much about archaeology. Two other volunteers and I were given our own trench to excavate ourselves. We were first taught how to map, measure, and dig our trench appropriately, so our mornings were spent digging from around 8 a.m. until about noon. It was definitely hot and humid. It was Southeast Asia in the summertime, so we wore a full quick dry hiking pants, long sleeve hiking shirts most of the time just to keep protected from the sun and the mosquitoes, as dengue fever was actually a real threat. I actually never had a moment the entire time I was there that I was not coated in powerful bug spray with a high deep because of this. Someone on the team actually did get dengue, so it was a real threat. We were kindly given traditional Cambodian scarves to wear as well, so we could use them to wipe the sweat off of ourselves while we were working. Needless to say, I wash mine daily in the sink because temperatures could get between 90 and 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and the humidity was always very high because we were in a tropical area. With our mornings in the trenches, we excavated first in 10 centimeter levels before cutting it down to 5. We found countless pottery sherds in every layer, as well as small animal bones too. One day we actually found a very, very large sherd in excellent condition. There was also a lot of fired clay to be found around the area. Lunch was always served at noon, and it consisted of rice with traditional Khmer dishes and a fruit for dessert. We ate under the shade of the nearby pagoda, and we were very excited on the days where we had the ice cream man who would ride by on his bike and offer us popsicles. He began to pick up on our lunchtime and would regularly come by. I mean, he was awesome. What a great entrepreneur. Oh, those archaeologists, man, they're going to be really hot at lunchtime. Let's get them some popsicles. It worked out well for everybody. Our afternoons consisted of sherd washing, as it just got too hot and humid in the trenches for me to keep digging at that time. Cambodian afternoons would be extremely warm until it would randomly burst into rain for short periods of time. So the sherd washing was my zen after the mornings in the field. Our evenings consisted of family-style dinners with more white rice and traditional Khmer plates. The coconut house made the best fruit smoothies, which they referred to them as shakes, by the way, but they're smoothies. So I would get one of those nightly before taking a dip in the pool, which we were very lucky enough to have there as well. One night, we all decided to take a trip out to the circus, which was awesome. We ate at La Pizza, which was delicious, before heading out to the circus tent. It was part of an art school in the area where students from there graduated and moved on to some of the bigger, more important circuses in Siem Reap. So this was kind of their training facility for young people. The show was great, consisting of traditional dancing, acrobatics, juggling with fire, and one guy who would balance on an alarming amount of things all at once. And I would also just like to say that by going back to La Pizza, that's apparently consistently the place to be around the world, because when I was in Cannes for the Cannes Film Festival, everyone talked about La Pizza there. And there, of course, was La Pizza here in Battambang. And of course, they're in no way related. But if you see a place while you're out around the world called La Pizza, I have to say, try it out. I've had good luck with that. Everything was so affordable in Cambodia that I only spent a little over $100 while I was there, and I was splurging. This experience was truly, truly once in a lifetime. I learned so much about the Cambodian culture and the archaeology, and lived like a true adventurer, walking to the expedition site daily from the temple to the site behind it. My trip truly reminded me why I love to travel and why I love to learn new things and new skills. I think it's so important for everyone to see as much of the world as they can. So it's important to see how other people live around the world so that you can appreciate the life that you have and become more educated and open-minded and cultured. That's just my little PSA for today there. But now let's talk a bit about the temples of Angkor, talking about Ta Prom, Angkor Thom, and Angkor Wat. While there are many, 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 many temples, you have no idea how many there actually are. If you're going to see any of them, I personally recommend Ta Prom, that was my favorite, Angkor Thom, and Angkor Wat. If a visit to Cambodia is not on your to-do list, I highly recommend that you switch up your priorities, if no other reason than to see the temples of Angkor. After being in the presence of what was once the greatest temples in the world, these great temples of Angkor, your whole perspective on life can easily shift. When the temples of Angkor are mentioned, the first thing that comes to mind for most people is Angkor Wat. In fact, many believe that Angkor Wat is the only temple within the structure, not having heard otherwise. However, Angkor Wat is actually just a single temple within the city of Angkor, and it is one of Cambodia's most popular tourist attractions. Angkor was the capital city of the Khmer Empire, thriving in its prime from around the 9th century until about the 15th century. Now it lays in beautiful, serene ruins that are spread out across the countryside, scattered in between the trees. The first thing you should know about visiting the Temple of Angkor is that these ruins stretch over 154 square miles and consist of around 72 major temples or other buildings. So when you visit the temples, you really need to allow more than a day. If you are trying to see as much as you can in a day, however, like I was, you will absolutely need a driver of some kind to take you around from temple to temple as they are vastly spread out. But there is no need to plan in advance, as drivers can be found anywhere near these attractions. I was lucky enough to hire an incredible driver for the day who took me from location to location and waited for me as I explored each one. The first thing you have to do is pick up a ticket at the Angkor Ticket Building, which any driver there will have knowledge on how to do for you. The day pass costs $37, but you can also purchase a 3-day pass for $62. Or a 7-day pass for $72. Now, these are also back in 2019. I don't know how the pandemic has changed the pricing here, but that's to give you a guide of what it could be. That was what it was for me at the time when I went. Since I was only in Siem Reap for one day, I just picked up that 1-day pass. We started out at Ta Prom. To be honest with you, though Angkor Wat is absolutely incredible, Ta Prom was definitely my favorite of the temples that I saw. Apparently, this was used as a set for the old Tomb Raider movie with Angelina Jolie, and I'm really not surprised to find that out. There are trees growing through, around, and out of all of the ruins, and while many passageways are left intact, many are in ruins to show you the degradation that time has had on these fantastic structures. This unbelievable temple stretches on in passageways for what seems like miles of interior and exterior passages, and it is breathtaking. This one has no climbing involved at all, but its beauty is in how much nature has claimed it and yet how much it still stands. I will highly recommend seeing Ta Prom on your Angkorian journey because you really do feel like you are exploring this lost temple in the jungle. Tomb Raider feels all over it. Seriously, they clearly filmed it there, so it is worth it. Next, we made our way over to Angkor Thom, which consisted of several different sites and temples. The Bayon was an impressive temple that you could climb up to see the many faces carved into it. It is said that there used to be 200 faces placed around the structure before time claimed the majority of them. Then I walked from there over to the Bafun. The Bafun had a bridge that welcomed people to it, rising slightly up and out of the field surrounding it. This one in particular was a quick-to-see yet very, very steep temple, but it seemed almost magical in a way. If you've ever been to see any of the Mayan pyramids, this kind of reminded me of that in the way that it was very steep and quick up and out. There were little yellow butterflies fluttering all around on the grounds, and there was greenery everywhere. It seemed to be touched by God in such a way that nature painted it and added it to its beauty. It just had steep staircases you could climb and look down on all the surrounding stones and greenery. I'm gonna flub this. I'm not even gonna pretend like I know what I'm saying. The Phimiuncus was very near the Bafuan, and I admired the animal sculptures that stood on each of its corners that stared down at you from each level of its pyramid-like shape. Finally, we went to Angkor Wat. I know everyone wants to hear about Angkor Wat. Though I was sure that Ta Prohm would be the most memorable temple, Angkor Wat, I do have to say, blew my mind. The fact that this structure still stands so tall and so proud with details carved into the art the way that they are is just astounding. There's a moat that surrounds this amazing structure. Once you cross over the bridge, you enter into the outer structure. Then as you go deeper and head into the open interior bridge across the green grass to reach the main temple, and then there's this large standing form within. Once you have seen Angkor Wat in person, you know exactly why it's the most famous of all these temples, I do have to say. Only photos can really describe all of its incredible sights at Angkor Wat. It is the largest religious monument in the world, and yet you can climb up to the very top tower that overlooks all of the sides of this amazing architecture. It was incredible. The thing that stood out to me the most was how detailed the carvings were in the stone. There were many, many magical creatures, peoples, and scenes carved into the temple's stone, and they were so detailed, it was breathtaking. Also, while I was there, people use formalities as a way to communicate in Cambodia. So you would, if someone was your age per se, or a younger person, you would say, sister. Oh, hey, sister. It's like you're calling them an equal. And then, you know, as they were older than you, or if they had other respects they would demand, they would call you something else. So a lot of the younger girls, because I guess I look really young too, would call me sister. And while I was at Angkor Wat, I guess I was the widest person imaginable that was there by myself. And this group of young girls thought it was the cool. I mean, they were just giggling and thought it was so great. And like, sister, 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 please, please, can we have a picture with you? And they were all excited. And it was actually really cute. So that was fun. That happened while I was in Angkor Wat as well. Something else that you might find interesting that I did is there's a lot of the Buddhist monks that are there at the Angkorian temples wearing their orange robes. And many, many, many of them are actually young boys. And I guess the way that works there is young boys a lot of times are pledged to the temples to work there for a short period of time. A lot of them don't stay as a way to just get honor towards their family. So they'll work for the temples for a set period of years to gain honor for their family and then move on to something else. So a lot of the monks are actually very young, which I thought was surprising. Anyway, seeing the temples really makes you think about how vast and powerful the Khmer Empire was. I couldn't help but think about how interesting it was that Cambodia's ancient cities were built better than their current civilization. What have they gone through to live their lives like they have now? I mean, they went from one of the greatest nations in the world with these incredible sculptures to just living in 10 huts. And I think obviously the Khmer Rouge has a lot to do with that. But it's an interesting topic all in itself, that how did these people live back then, and how did they build such astounding structures that are able to survive for hundreds of years, for centuries? It's definitely something to think about. And no wonder archaeologists are continually studying Angkor and all of its temples. Now, I did go a bit into what spirit houses were already, but I thought I'd just give a bit more detail because as a soon-to-be master of the occult, one of my absolute favorite things to do in the world is to learn about the strange and/or paranormal traditions that exist around the world. What a culture believes as a whole really does tell you so much about where the community came from, why its current traditions work the way that they do, and where they're headed in their journey through life. The more peculiar traditions tell more about a society than anything else, to me anyway. It colors a community's character, so to speak. So when I visited Cambodia and saw all of the homes within the villages decorated with bright, colorful spirit houses, I just had to know more about what they were and how they functioned. So what is a spirit house? I kind of already went over this. It's a small birdhouse-like roof structure that sits on a pillar. They are generally made with extremely bright colors and found outside of one's home. And no matter how simple the actual home, the spirit house is almost always much more eccentric. They generally cost the equivalent of $600 or more to buy, which in Cambodia can be close to a year's salary. You will usually find these spirit houses with incense or other offerings left in them. But what is it really and why is it there? Well, the way it was explained to me by the locals is as follows. A spirit house is put outside for any spirits in the area to live in. If you appease the spirits and they live in the house outside, then they won't haunt your home. It's basically a home built for the spirits to live in. If you provide these spirits with an acceptable home, they won't come haunt your home or make your life harder than it needs to be. This is why you will find people continually placing offerings outside of their spirit houses. And it was true at most places we visited that the spirit houses were always nicer and more decorated than one's own home. Why are these found everywhere? Why is it so easy to be believed by Cambodians? Well, Cambodia has gone through many dominant religions, and the idea of spirit houses fits within all of the religions it's morphed through. It follows Buddhist principles, it follows Hindu principles, and it even works with the ideas of animists. In the Buddhist tradition, the offerings left in the spirit houses are thought to provide recently deceased loved ones with the fuel to make it to the afterlife to be reincarnated. Animists believe more that the offerings are appeasing the spirits of nature. One thing is certain, however, universally throughout all of these religions, spirit houses are found all across Southeastern Asian lands. I really hope you get a chance to make it out to Cambodia to experience these for yourself because they really are interesting. They're breathtaking, they're eye-catching, and they represent the complexities of other cultures and their religions. And before I call it here today, there is one more thing about Cambodia that I want to share with you that I find absolutely fascinating, and it is the idea of hero rats being used to detonate bombs left behind from the Khmer Rouge. It's called APOPO, and it is an organization that works with giant African pouched rats. So on this trip to Cambodia that I went through, I had no idea that landmines were such a problem until I arrived. As Cambodia was plagued with 3 decades of recent war, there are landmines scattered all across the countryside, abandoned and ready to detonate at any moment. There is clearly real danger here, especially to the farmers, who account for roughly 60% of Cambodia's population, and those living in the rural areas, who account for nearly 80% of the Cambodian population. An estimated 15,000 to 20,000 people are killed by landmines each year in Cambodia. In fact, one of the people on the archaeological dig with us that was hired on board was a farmer that had lost his leg due to a landmine. So the people behind APOPO brought their program from Africa to Cambodia to help with this problem. When I first heard about APOPO, I was skeptical. They are using rats to help find landmines. That can't be safe for the rats, right? Well, lo and behold, rats are actually too small to detonate the landmines, so it is safe for them. And after getting a tour of the APOPO facility to see how these hero rats are treated, I was convinced that this truly is a remarkable cause that more people need to know about. APOPO trains and works with African giant pouch rats to help detect and remove landmine threats throughout Cambodia and parts of Africa. This is truly a spectacular idea, as the rats are intelligent, highly trainable, and too small to set off the landmines. The trainers develop a loving and dedicated relationship with their rat partners. These hero rats, as they call them, are extremely well cared for and given a specialized diet with regular exercise and much personal care and playtime. They also have weekly care from a dedicated on-site vet. At 4 weeks, the rats begin to be regularly handled by their trainers and begin training with the treat-reward system. They love bananas, by the way, so that is the treat of choice. First, they train safely with tea eggs filled with the smell of TNT and gradually work their way up to the field with real explosives. These rats are nocturnal, so they can only be allowed out for 2 hours a day in the early morning before it becomes dangerous to them. So they work quick days and are coated in sunscreen before going out into the field for work. Regardless, they speed up operations considerably. One hero rat can search an area the size of a tennis court in 30 minutes, something that would take 4 days to do without them. Once they find a landmine, they scratch the area to reveal where it is and make their way back to meet their trainer for their treat. These rats are treated as heroes, as that is what they are. They are smart and an integral part of the landmine detection process of Cambodia. They're saving lives every day, and everyone respects the hard work they're doing to save their community. Apopo works in solely African countries, with the exception of Cambodia, the first country they began working in outside of Africa. Over the years, Apopo and its hero rats have detected and destroyed 107,633 landmines, saving the lives of 957,350 people from the threat of explosives. I think it's really important to realize how intelligent and integral these rats are. They are true heroes and another proof that man and animal can work together in many, many capabilities. And I hope this knowledge can help give rats a better reputation than they currently have, because they really are incredible creatures. So can we just all agree at this point that rats are pretty awesome? Because they are. So that pretty much sums up my trip throughout the Cambodian countryside and beyond, from my day in Disneyland Shanghai, kind of, sort of, to my archaeological experience in Battambang, Cambodia, to the temples of Angkor and the hero rats. I hope you enjoyed my fun little story. I'm going to be back probably with some more weird stuff next week. So until then, I hope you guys stay weird.